My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break and stay retro. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, there's nothing fancy about it. Just welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I'm Darren Hupke, and this week, a brand new guest of the show. They have been somebody who's been in my my Blue Sky feed for a long time and listening and discovering more and more like podcasts and Patreons and things. You always see the name Stormageddon popping up. So Matt Stormageddon is joining the show. Thank you for joining. Thanks for taking the time to do this. Hello.
Sure. I'm excited to be here. Yeah. It's funny how when you like, because 90% of the guests, especially for like side quests and stuff, which is something we can talk about a little later. Like, I'm always looking for guests. And so it's like, well, who's popular on the Blue Sky Sphere, or who's hanging out in Discords that I like, right? And you're one of those names that I keep seeing in a bunch of really cool places too. So I'm excited to collaborate. And hopefully all of the things you've seen of me are all good things. You know, you can't always control the narrative.
Yeah, no, all good. No, no suspect, you know, Twitter posts coming up from years ago about strange right-leaning thoughts or anything like that at all. So nothing I've seen yet anyway. Yeah, well, thank you for jumping on and doing it. If you don't mind, actually, because you are a new guest and everything, feel free to introduce, you know, to yourself to the listeners. Like, what is it that you do? What have been your biggest projects lately? Like who are you, and how can we be excited about the things that you're doing?
Sure. I will try and keep it brief. Thankfully, I don't do 4 podcasts anymore. I only do 2, so it rounds down the plugs a little. But yeah, I'm Matt Storm, a.k.a. Stormageddon. Yes, Storm is my real last name. There's a story behind it. It's okay. It was just shortened at Ellis Island. It used to be something much longer. But I'm a podcaster and a DJ. I've been podcasting and DJing for about 13 years or so, which makes me, as I said, off the air, want to turn to dust, because it's a long time to be doing this. But I primarily do 2 video game podcasts. One is called Fun and Games that I do with the incredible Jeff Moonen. It's broadly a topic-based discussion show. Sometimes we have guests on, sometimes we have game devs, voice actors, composers. Sometimes we just cover broad topics like, is grinding in games good? Do we want signposting in exploration games? Genre retrospectives, console retrospectives, kind of just a positive and fun and fairly light conversation about games. We do dive into deeper topics as well, but for the most part, we try to keep it light and celebrate gaming. Within that feed, also, we do a sub-series called Side Quests, where a different host every episode talks about a game they love and why they loved it. This was born out of my intense rage and hate for Twitter as a platform. And what I mean by that is, I mean, it sucks for a whole host of reasons now, but back when I started this series, it was, I saw a screenshot posted about the new Mario, Paper Mario at the time. It was, I think Origami King was the name of that one. And it was like a screenshot of Mario fighting a bad guy. And everyone's replying going, oh, this is going to suck. Terrible Paper Mario game. Boo. And I was like, really? Like, it's a picture. What are we doing here? And so I wanted to inject some positivity into the gaming sphere. And so I created this series where a different host will talk about a game they love and why they love it. Judgment free. No engagement from, it's a monologue. And then every 50 episodes, Jeff and I will bring a guest on to do a longer form version of that format, but still just unabashedly celebrating games. We have this saying on Fun and Games that every game is somebody's favorite. Good, bad, doesn't matter. Everyone loves something, and that we should celebrate that love of games regardless of the quality of the final product, because ultimately at the end of the day, that doesn't always matter. The other show I do, briefly, to not be here forever, is called Reignite. Started as a Mass Effect play-along podcast where me and my co-host Frankie Bradley the Strange decided, what if we replayed our favorite video game franchise, but played Commander Shepard as if we were in Shepard's shoes, and make choices as if we were Shepard, and most importantly, romance the aliens we would want to romance. And so it gave us this new perspective on not only representation in games, but also decision-making, the decision trees in that series, and why it's so brilliant as it is. It was a lot of fun to explore that. We ended up going on to Andromeda, which I hadn't played at the time when we played it for the show, and then from there moved on naturally to the next BioWare franchise that we love, which is Dragon Age. It's where we currently sit. We are playing through Dragon Age 2. We plan to play all the way through Veilguard, and who knows, maybe by then there will be a new Mass Effect game, although the way EA is going, who knows if that'll actually happen? But those are the 2 main shows I do. I also DJ mostly private events. I've been DJing for a long time. I Twitch stream every so often. Most of my DJing has been there these days on a platform called Fuser, which is made by Harmonix. It's fun to mix and do all sorts of cool stuff over there. But that's broadly me. Yeah. So there's the pitch.
There we go. That's a lot. You are a busy person. So yes. Yeah, that's fun. And I love just your angle and take on the positivity of it all. Like, I remember being a young gamer and an AOL or an AIM username that I had in like 2001 was don't buy an Xbox.
And that was just sort of like, no punctuation, no spaces, no anything. And it was just like hardcore fanboy. Like, I loved Sony stuff. And so I had to make sure everything else that wasn't was bad. And like, why was there so much like angry, like debate and argument coming from like a younger me? Like, it just doesn't make sense. But I've done, you know, in the last 20 years or so, like just a total 180. Like, yeah, like you said, every game, you know, could be somebody's favorite game, and you should just share and talk about the things you love and enjoy, and talk about the things that entertain you, talk about the things that, like, you know, put a smile on your face and wowed you. You know, there's so much positivity that could be spread, but we spend so much time just like wanting to like negatively like bash things and not even like critique them. Like, I'd be fine with a well-written critique of something, but oftentimes it's just, you know, slanderous and negative. And like, why waste your time doing that? So like, if there's something I don't like, I just don't need to talk about it. I'll talk about something I do like instead. And I'd like to hear what you like. And if we all kind of like held ourselves in conversation that way, it would just be a lot easier and a lot simpler and a lot like, you know, more manageable to like live together online in spaces and stuff. So I try and do the same thing. I mean, like if I don't like something, there's no reason to share it, you know, like use your platform and user space to talk about the things you do love and the things that you do want to help promote and share that bring you joy. So I like that. Like minds then, right there. All right. Well, do you want to get in some this or that? Get the synaptic flashes, you know, happen in our brains there. I'll hit you with a few. Okay. Let's get you started. I like this one to fill people out. Tekken or Street Fighter?
Oh, shoot. Oh, that's tough. One. I really love those two. It's got to be Street Fighter, though. I love Street. 2D fighters have always been my primary favorite, though. I love 3D fighters, Virtua Fighter, Tekken, but like especially the newest Street Fighter, Street Fighter 6 was excellent. So I think I've got to go Street Fighter.
I loved it, and I love that World Tour mode. That just, you know, as a Final Fight
so
fan,
ridiculous.
It was just
so
good.
Fun.
Yeah. Okay. Cartridge or CD?
Cartridge, hands down. There's something about that click of popping it in.
Okay. What's your favorite cartridge?
Oh, favorite cartridge. That's so hard. It probably has to be Metroid Fusion. It's one of my favorite games. I actually got a physical copy recently. I hadn't had one since I was younger, but a friend of mine gave me his extra copy, and there's something about popping that into my analog pocket and hearing the click.
Okay.
That's just super satisfying.
Okay. I didn't even mean like a game. I'm glad you were able to pull a game so quickly out of that. I just meant literally like the physical form factor, like which cartridge size or style do you like the most?
I mean, Game Boy Advance is up there. It's one of my favorite consoles. There's something about the N64 also that it was just dome shaped and you just pop it in, right? Like, something about the top loader, which we didn't have. We had it with the SNES, but like the Nintendo was like, you had to jam the thing in and push it down. And turns out that was actually breaking the cartridges, which is wild to think. It's why the top loader was always better. But yeah, probably those two are, I think, my top cartridges.
Yeah, fun. Animal Crossing or Elden Ring?
Oh my God, could I care less about two games more? No, that's not true. I do like Animal Crossing and Elden Ring, but like I'm only a recent From Software convert. I guess I'll say Elden Ring, because life sim games I get bored of pretty quick. Like, I like playing them, but I kind of get wander off eventually. Whereas Elden Ring, I did finish. It required a lot of help from friends who logged on and helped me fight those bosses, but I did it, goddammit.
I don't know what the last Animal Crossing game I played was. Probably like the DS one, and I've never played Elden Ring. I've only played a handful of FromSoft, like those Souls-like games. So it's weird that I even, you know, threw that question out there. Just the random, you know, distance from those is all it was. Unnecessary sequel or a remake?
Oh, remake. I genuinely don't hate remakes. I think some of them are not great, but like I just played the Tactics Remaster remake. I'd never played the original, and it was excellent. It's become like I think my favorite Final Fantasy game. But like I love that stuff. I mean, I think we should remake more bad games. Like, remaking good games kind of makes sense, but like someone go remake Bubsy 3D. I mean, they're making Bubsy 4D now, actually, which I'm genuinely excited for. But like, let's remake some bad games or some mediocre games that should have a new life, right? Like, why aren't we doing that more? It just seems to make more sense than remaking stuff that was already good. Like, Resident Evil 4 getting a remake, the remake was excellent, but that OG game is like basically perfect. Yeah. So it just seemed unnecessary.
Yeah, I like both. I mean, like you mentioned already, like Andromeda, like it didn't seem like that was a necessary sequel at all, you know, but obviously like some people, you know, wanted that and it was fine. And then remake some, you know, why remake Resident Evil 4? Why remake Silent Hill 2? You know, but they've come out and, you know, have a new existence and everything. It would be best if you could both access the original and, you know, yes, have these remakes come out and everything as well, of course. But yeah, we'll do one more. Let's do a simple one. First person or third person?
Third person all day long. I used to get nauseous from first person. Now I've gotten much better at it. I played a lot of first person games that I love, like Prey, but like third person, like Mass Effect we were talking about earlier, like that's my bread and butter. Like whenever I pull up an Obsidian game or a, you know, Elder Scrolls game, always go right to the third person mode. Never stay in first person. That's my preference.
Fun. Okay. Well, that was the this or that. We can do a nice icebreaker then, and we'll move into the main topic. But for this episode, let me ask you, who is your favorite character or one of your favorite characters that prominently wears green?
Huh. What an interesting twist. Prominently wears green. See, now you have more editing work to do because I have to hem and haw and think, and you have to figure it out. I mean, the easy answer would be Raphael, because he is green, the Ninja Turtle. But he's technically not wearing green, so we're not going to go with that. I guess I'll go with...
Technically, he's only wearing red.
Yeah, technically he is only wearing red.
Naked turtle.
I believe he's wearing green, but Frog from Chrono Trigger. He is green, but I believe his outfit is also green. And so I would have to say Frog from one of my favorite games of all time.
Okay.
Is definitely up there as someone who wears green. I'm pretty sure his tunic is green.
I'm not going to dispute the answer. I'm doing a quick side Google just to confirm. Oh yeah, yeah. He's got a brown like a jacket, but a green tunic and a green cape and everything. Yeah. 100%. Yep.
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger is one of those ones that I've not personally rolled credits on. My wife's started it numerous times, and I've watched her play through like big chunks of it. And she doesn't really game much at all, but she's like replayed Chrono Trigger probably four times. And so we've been together, you know, 23 years now or something. So I've seen her, you know, in just different, you know, every 5 years or so, she's going back to it and everything. So I've seen most of the game via her. And then I read the Chrono Trigger book from Boss Fight Books and everything. I've done everything I can do but actually play the game myself. But I love the art, love the design, love the creators, love the music, love everything about it. Just physically have not played it.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with watching games. There are plenty of games I've experienced only via streamers and other things. Like, I'm a fan of the very incredibly cheesy Five Nights at Freddy's franchise, but I played the first game a little bit and didn't get very far because I'm a coward. But but I have watched other people stream those games and seen them from start to finish. There's like a camaraderie in watching someone else be scared.
Yeah.
But I can't recommend Chrono Trigger enough. It's my favorite game of all time, and it is one of the best video game soundtracks, I think, composed ever, full stop. Like, there's some hyperbole in saying it's the best RPG ever. I could see there being flaws, but the soundtrack, no ifs, ands, and buts, easily one of the best ever.
Yeah. You're a coward. Did you used to be able to play through, like, scary or horror games at all, or has it always been that way for you?
Other way around. So I've always been a coward, and then in the last 3 or 4 years, I've started playing horror games. So during the pandemic, I streamed Dead Space 1 and 2, which were fantastic, and streaming was a great way to get into the horror franchise because there was that camaraderie of the folks in my chat hanging out, especially the ones who knew what was coming, or hanging out just to wait for the jump scare. So that was a lot of fun. And then the indie horror scene is what's really pulled me in, games like Iron Lung, Signalis, Mouthwashing. I have found that I prefer psychological horror, though I haven't played Silent Hill yet, games like Mouthwashing. But the jump scare stuff doesn't bother me if it's once in a while. The scariest game I played that I can't believe I finished was Alan Wake 2. And that's mostly because I love the Remedyverse. I love Control, and I love Alan Wake. Control's one of my favorite games of all time. And I wanted to stay in that universe. And it's like, oh, they made it a full horror game? What are they doing to me?
Yeah.
But I actually got through it, and like the jump scares in that nearly killed me. Almost had a heart attack. But I do enjoy horror games now. I'm slowly making my way through the Resident Evil 2 remake. I've played the Resident Evil 4 remake. Like, I'm more amenable to horror games because what I learned, a friend of this show and my show, Dave Jackson, did an episode about, like, you know, playing horror games for noobs. How did you get into horror games? And Adam Bucherry on that episode said something that was brilliant to me that I should have been able to realize but never did. You can be a coward and enjoy horror games, which seems obvious, but to me I was like, I can't play these games, I'm too scared. But it's quite the opposite. And so I've come around on some horror movies too, stuff like Get Out, a lot of Jordan Peele's work has helped me with that as well. But I have found myself a fan of it. I have limits still, but I'm more willing to give it a shot because it hasn't killed me yet.
Yeah, I can still do horror films and everything, no issue. I grew up, like, horror, anything and everything was totally fine. Games, I could do it all the time. Dead Space, I did, you know, all the way through it with just the plasma cutter and everything. Like, I loved it, but now, just lately, I cannot, like, I can't do it. Like, it's just like a dread. I don't have like the entertainment of the dread or anything. It's just that feeling of dread and fear. And it's just like, okay, there's no joy here. Why am I doing this? But I've been given advice is, you know what, just bump the difficulty down, like go to easy or do something where you have like more ammo. And I realized like, you know what, that's what I should do. And that's why actually Alan Wake 2 is the one that I've wanted to play so bad, but like, I'm like, I know I don't want to like pay for this and then be just like paralyzed by this. And so I'm going to do that. Alan Wake 2 will be the one when I finally get an open, you know, game spot, you know, in my backlog and everything. And I'm going to drop that difficulty down. No problem. No loss of pride and be able to enjoy the game that way. So I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Yeah. I had to bump down the difficulty because also with most of the horror games, there's a lot of shooting and I am bad at shooting things. And so, I always bump the difficulty down because I'd rather get through the thing and see the story than suck at the gameplay.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the main topic then. I sent you my list of questions. You picked out quite a few, and then we whittled it down to two that we're going to do in our little recording session today. But this one is the one we're going to go with for this episode. What is an example of a game that is just right? It could be length, difficulty, challenge, style, or combination of them all, but what did it get right for you? So this is kind of more of you just being able to tell like a personal story and, you know, share something about one of your favorite games. But yeah, what is that game for you that gets it just right?
Oh, what? I mean, it's such a good question because what does just right mean, right? And this is my favorite thing about conversations about games is that there are so few quote unquote correct answers. To me, this means a game that feels perfect, not the best game ever made, not a game that is flawless or a masterpiece, though it could be considered. To me, it's a game that just is perfect as it is. And to me, that game is, even though I've replayed it recently, and depending on the controller you're using could be a little finicky, but to me, Super Mario 64, which is one of my favorite games of all time, is a game that is just right. First of all, from the minute you take control of the stick, Mario is perfect to control. No notes. Fun, easy, a lot, you know, really easy to engage with. And then as far as gameplay goes, like, was the progenitor of 3D gameplay, you know, is the blueprint for a lot of 3D games, especially of that era and even now. And to me, like, just sets the bar for 3D gaming, but also for Mario games. And, like, there have been games I've liked more, but to this day, I think Super Mario 64 remains my favorite 3D Mario game specifically because of how closely it's tied to me and how much it meant to me when I first got it, but also how it continues to, even when I go back to it, feel basically perfect. Like, sometimes I think, like, the poor Switch ports, I think it's more about the Switch port than the controls, but like I have the on the Switch, I have the N64 wireless controller. When I went back and played with that, perfect, no notes. Like, I think its modern controls do it a disservice, but if you engage with it as it was, it's still basically a perfect, just right gaming experience.
I'd love it. Yeah, that's one of my favorite games of all time. Just I had it, you know, with the, you know, I guess I didn't get my 64 right at launch, but 6 or 7 months later. And yeah, that game was just, it was great to me. I think part of that Nintendo 64 analog stick, it wasn't like a true, like fully round, like enclosure. Like it had essentially like those 8 notches and everything, kind of like the C stick would have on the GameCube. And wait, did the C stick do that? I don't, maybe it did. I forget. But the 64, it had those notches out of there. And to me, like, it always seemed like the camera system, you know, as you know, janky feeling as you may feel it, like looking backwards, you know, but at the time I didn't really mind it that much at all, but I always felt like the camera angles would always match at least one of those notches. And so you could always like full tilt or full send in one of those directions and never feel like you were stuck or lost in between or not sure which exact angle to take and everything. But, yeah, I loved like getting my hands on that for the first time, that was just a mind-blowing thing coming from a Sega Genesis, you know, owner and everything, and then going to a Nintendo 64. It was like, oh man, video games can be fun. Oh wow, they're not just things to do when you're bored on the weekend, but you can actually find entertainment out of these things. And I loved Mario 64. I even loved that it just was almost over-designed, like the wall jumps and like the butt womp and long jump and like just the different movement controls. Like not a lot of the levels like really expected you to use like the full arsenal of his like movements and controls and mechanics. So like, you know, I've now seen players like doing like Kaizo Mario 64 stuff where they've made like super high end and high challenging things to like really test players like that. But it was always just neat that like, you know, there was a lot to do, but you didn't have to do all of that, or you didn't have to master all of that to still be able to enjoy and play the game and everything. Yeah, I love Mario 64. When did you first get to play it?
So, I have to remember that I'm not the host, and you're going to ask me the questions. So, I first played it when it first came out. So, I told this story in a few places. I did a SideQuest episode about Mario 64. I believe I did an episode of Nostalgia Arcanum about Mario 64. I've talked about it in quite a few places, but if you happen to be the three people who have not heard this story, I will regurgitate it here. Regurgitate is such a bad word to have used for that. It's disgusting. Matt, why would you say that? Anyway, I was turning 13 when this console came out. Please don't do the math. And it was my bar mitzvah year. And I told my parents from the minute we started playing my bar mitzvah, which was a fun party, my friends were there. I was like, I don't want any gifts from you guys. Nothing except the Nintendo 64, Mario 64, which came out, I believe, after my birthday and my bar mitzvah. And back then, pre-ordering wasn't as ubiquitous as it was now. So I didn't have a pre-order for it. I was just like, we're going to go buy it. We tried for weeks and weeks and weeks. Couldn't find it. Could never find it. It was sold out everywhere. And then one weekend, I was like feeling a little sad. And I was like, I really want this console. I was like, Dad, can we go? Can we check? Can we just go to the Toys R Us near us and just see? Maybe they'll have it this weekend. And he's like, sure. He didn't mind. And so we drove over. We get to... So back then... Games weren't lining the walls like they were back in, you know, back then, like they are now. It was in Toys R Us specifically, they had this like paper slip system where the games would be behind a case and then there'd be these paper slips with the bin number and a barcode and the price on it. And you'd grab the paper slip, bring it to a counter, and a guy would go into the back room and get you the thing. We grabbed the paper slip for Mario 64, of which they did have plenty of. Then we went to the counter and I asked this guy who towered over us and could have been 35 or 55. Like, I was at that age when you're 13. You're like, well, you're old because you're older than me. But anyway, we asked this guy, hey, do you have an N64? We'd like to buy one. He's like, oh, I don't know. I think we're sold out, but I'll go check. Went in the back. It's like, I found one. Would you like to buy it? And so we did. My co-host Jeff jokes that that was some other poor kid's villain origin story and that I took their poor pre-order. But we took it and we brought it home. I've talked about this on Funny Games before, but there is something visceral about certain game experience where there's a level of excitement that feels otherworldly almost, like you're vibrating with excitement. And bringing the N64 home, unpacking it, hooking it up, because I'm an expert at hooking up consoles at this point. I'd had an Atari, a Nintendo, a Genesis, a Super Nintendo. I was very familiar with it. My parents had no idea. It was all me. But ripping it open, ripping the game open, hooking it up to the TV and popping in the cartridge and immediately started playing. And like the wonder that I felt in that moment, like there are only a few other experiences that I can compare to it. Like to me, the first time I played Mass Effect 2 felt the same way because it was the expectation of Mass Effect 1 plus what actually happens in the beginning of Mass Effect 2, which I won't spoil if someone happens to have not played it, but I think it's one of the greatest gaming intros in all of video games because of what they do. But like, and there have been some other milestone moments, you know, the first time I played Pokemon Sword and Shield on the Switch, even though that ended up being kind of a disappointment to me, like the first big open world 3D Pokemon experience. Things like that, these things that you like wait and wait for, can't believe are real. Like the first when the Nintendo Switch was announced, and I grew up a handheld gamer, and now I'm going to get a console that's both for my TV and handheld, the thing I've always wanted, instead of having two separate systems for that, I have one system to play everything. Things like that. And Mario 64 is so closely tied to that kind of moment that I think it's also why it's that like just right perfect gaming experience for me, because I have all of those memories tied into that game. And especially now, I feel even more nostalgic. I had lost my father last year. And so, like, even thinking about this story now, it warms me even more because I get to think of that. Like, my dad always didn't have a goddamn clue about video games. But if I wanted to play something like Tecmo Bowl on the Nintendo, he'd play with me and lose all day long. Didn't care. Like, always supported these things, even if he didn't understand them. And gaming was that. He didn't really get it, but he knew I liked it and always supported me. And, like, so this story is closely tied to that, too. And so all of those things kind of make why I plucked that specific game for this experience, because it really fits a lot of things to make it feel just right for me.
Your dad sounds awesome.
He was, yes.
I didn't have a great relationship with my dad. Like, you know, he was a bum. But I'm a father now, so I have three daughters and all that stuff. And I just know, like, to be the dad that I want to be means to not be the dad that I had. And so it's just easy. My instruction manuals just do the opposite thing. And so being there for moments for them, like, even when I don't get it, like, I just know, like, it's just, to me, I'm like, I get it. Like, you know, like, this is their thing. Boy, this is silly. Like, I don't understand this at all, but you know what? Y'all are into this. Y'all love this. We're going to go with this. And, you know, I'm glad that it's going to hopefully be a memory of theirs one day when I'm, you know, old and boring or maybe even gone, you know, but that's cool. That's such a great story. Yeah. I remember Toys R Us and I remember the ticket system, everything. Yeah, too. Plus 3 years from you, I believe, than if I did the math, but I'm not going to say that out loud from you. Not plus, whatever. 3 years in the younger direction. That's okay. Yeah. But
math is hard. It's fine.
Yeah. I had, my Nintendo 64 experience was, I convinced my parents to let me sell the Genesis to some like secondhand, like video game store, and save the money. And I wanted to buy it right away. But they offered us like next to nothing for the Genesis and all the games I had. So I had like some money and it was just like, well, you can save it up and you can get it. And then it ended up being really hard to find that Christmas. So it was the only time in my life that I did not have a video game console of any kind. It was probably 3 or 4 months and it was probably the worst and most boring time, you know? And then it was like income tax season and my parents got back some money and, typically, when any time like family came out to visit, cousins would come. It was like the coolest thing because you got to hang out and play with your cousins that you loved. And this just so happened to be a time my cousin Sean was visiting, and my parents came back after being gone for hours because they went into the city and picked up the Nintendo 64 and made good on the promise because we didn't have it for Christmas and everything, and pulled up with Nintendo 64, Mario 64, Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, and Cruisin' USA, and an extra controller. And same thing, I was ripping that box open, everything, and then I instantly did not want my cousin to be there. It was just going to be like, no, you're going to take away time I have playing this. I'm going to have to pass the controller around and share, and this is not anything I want to do right now at all. Yeah, Mario 64 was just, it also echoed a lot of things I do in life. I remember faking being sick once we went back to school and everything, and I was like, yeah, I'm not feeling good. And I stayed home for like 2 days in a row, like getting like 50 or 60 stars, just burning through the game, like 100% all day. And I would do, even as an adult now, I call out of work when big games come out, you know, use those sick days to like play those landmark moments and everything. But it was in my DNA all the way back then with Mario 64. But yeah, I agree. That is a game that gets it just right. It's a game that's, you know, almost perfect and just great memories. But what a wonderful conversation. You sparked some emotion out of me, and maybe only the second time maybe that's ever happened on the podcast. So you're setting a high bar for yourself as a guest.
love to hear it.
Anything you'd like to share? Because we did it. We answered the question. Like that's the podcast. But anything you'd like to share? Any episodes of the show you want to recommend people maybe check out? If of those three listeners who haven't heard maybe anymore, what should people do if they want to get more Stormageddon after this?
Well, I mean, the best thing you can do is go to djstormageddon.com. That takes you to my link tree because I am old and therefore I use the older platforms for my social media and stuff. But if you go to djstormageddon.com, you can find my merch store. You can find links to both of my podcasts. You can find a link to the Patreon for Fun and Games, which has a free tier if you want to join. And just it's a one-stop shop for like the articles I write and other things that are free for everyone to see. And then a few paid tiers as well if you want to contribute. And then the other best place to find what I'm doing is on Blue Sky. I'm more active there than really anywhere else. And I'm at djstormageddon.com on Blue Sky as well. As far as episodes to check out, I mean, we've done a ton of really cool stuff. We've done a Mario retrospective over on Fun and Games. We have so many side quest episodes that we have done, including, I had mentioned, one of my... I'm trying to remember what number side quests. I used to know the numbers of every episode, but now that we're in the, like, 400s, it's kind of hard to keep that all in my brain. But I did an episode on Mario 64 on side quests as well. But we've done a Sonic retrospective, a Mario retrospective. We've done... 2D platformer retrospective. We recently actually did an episode this year at some point. We did an episode. We're tackling difficulty versus like good game design and difficulty versus frustration with certain types of games. We talked about platformers. We've also now talked about puzzle games. We want to talk about boss design at one point, kind of a new running series that we've done. And the one we did about platformers was really interesting. Like the kinds of games that seem well designed versus not, like, not everything is Bubsy 3D, right? There are levels and scales. We talked a little bit more about Mario Sunshine, which is a pretty panned Mario game, although it's probably not as bad as we all remember it. Things like that. And so that's fun. You can find Fun and Games wherever you get your podcasts. Same for Reignite. You can Google it. Or like if you have a podcast platform you prefer, we're on all of them. And if we're not on your podcast platform of choice, then DM me on Blue Sky so I can add it, because I'm pretty sure we're on everything at this point. We're even on Deezer, and I don't even think anybody still uses Deezer, so there's that.
All right. Well, I'll put some links in the show notes so people can find those things as well. I did an episode of SideQuest on Umjammer Lammy, so if you want to have like a bridge from here, go to there, and then just keep the podcast feed playing and find some more. But thank you so much, Matt, for jumping onto this show. Like I said, that's the episode. So I look forward to chatting with you again. Spoiler alert, we're going to immediately do another episode after this, but listeners, you'll hear that weeks from now after hearing this, but that's just the way things work. But otherwise, thanks for coming, and yeah, have a good one, Matt.
Thank you. This was a blast. Take care.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary cultural and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.